This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into 5-on-3, WFUV Sports' best, if only, hockey podcast. I'm Tucker Austin, today joined by Grace McCarron and Lydia Perner. Grace, of course, one of our Islanders beat reporters and certified puck knower. Lydia Perner, one of our Rangers beat reporters and the president of the Will Cooley fan club. Today, we've got some Stanley Cup playoffs to get through. The Florida Panthers are through. They got by the Carolina Hurricanes handedly in what turned out to be a gentleman's sweep. Surprisingly enough, I thought the Hurricanes were dead to rights. Edmonton and Dallas continue their series with a game five tonight as of the recording of this podcast. That's May 29th. They'll play tonight in Dallas to see if the Oilers can move on. But before we get into all that Stanley Cup discussion and a little bit of IIHF at the end, Grace, we'll start with you. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Islanders new GM had his press conference this morning, feeling really good about that. He said all the things I needed to hear. Patrick Waugh saying, I'm eating it up. And obviously, we have a lot of good playoff action going on too. I'm really excited for game five of Stars Oilers tonight. So I'm good.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good too, but it's been a very chaotic morning in my house. Like, there's so much work going on. So if you hear banging in the background, there's contractors, there's wet paint behind me. I don't know what's going on. So if the dog starts barking or there's banging, that's my bad. But overall, doing pretty good and excited to talk some hockey.
Yeah, nothing super new from Newark, New Jersey, from the land of the Devils. Nothing too interesting going on with the New York Rangers right now. Grace, of course, just filled us in on what's going on with the Isles. But we'll get right into the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll start with the series that's over. The back-to-back Eastern Conference champions are the Florida Panthers. And, I mean, I said it before on this podcast, like, last week, and I think the week before that. Ever since Florida got by Tampa, I've kind of had them pegged as the team that's going to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, this game against Carolina, game five was actually really competitive. And so was game four, to be honest, because the Hurricanes kind of, they brought all the defense they possibly could in game four. And then game five, they got out on the front foot. They got really aggressive in that first period, scored two goals to take the lead. Then it was a three-goal second for Florida. Carolina would tie. But then Florida kind of just really just stayed on top of them. And they seemingly ran out of gas in that game. That's what I saw. But starting with you, Lydia, what's your takeaway from this series, like for Florida or Carolina?
So I think going into the playoffs every year, I don't think people fear the Hurricanes for as good of a team that they are in the regular season. And I don't know if this is, for me, recency bias with, you know, playing the Hurricanes twice in the past couple of years, but they've never moved me. They're, to me, regular season, yes, they're really good, but they play that suffocating style that honestly goes stale in the playoffs. And you saw Rod Brind'Amour post-game, like when he was asked, well, what do you need to do to get over the Eastern Conference final hump, get over the second round hump? And he was like, well, I think that the Panthers play our style of game. They just do it a little bit better. And I don't necessarily know if I agree with that, because if you look at like the Panthers roster construction and points production, they got like, let me see, it's 10 guys in multi-digit scoring. That's like 10 play. That's absurd. Like, there's no other team that's close, versus the Hurricanes have three players in multi-digit scoring. So, sure, the suffocating style hockey, getting hard on the forecheck is great, but if you don't have a roster that can play from top to bottom, when push comes to shove, you're going to run out of gas, like you said, Tucker, and that's exactly what happened to the Hurricanes. And, I mean, you saw the Panthers after that game. They looked like they weren't even, like, celebrating. They were just like the one, job's not finished. Two, they were, it's just not as if they expected it, but it's like, it's just not a surprise to them that they just kind of manhandled the Hurricanes. And I think if you're Rod Brind'Amour and the Carolina Hurricanes, you got to go back to the drawing board, because I think you think it's working, but I don't, it's not.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Lydia just said. It's obvious to me past 3 seasons that the Florida Panthers are just better than everyone else in the Eastern Conference. And kind of remind, not to like mix my sports here, but I am going to do it. Reminds me a little bit of the Dodgers in the National League. They're the top team, and you just, the way that they're built is so different, and any other team, as good as they might be, and I think Carolina is a very good hockey team, but any other team would fear the Florida Panthers in the way that the Dodgers are feared in the National League in Major League Baseball. And I'm even like either team that comes out of the West, I'm still afraid for them. And those are two other very good hockey teams as well, because Florida is just different. They're deeper than they were last year. They got Brad Marchand at the deadline, Seth Jones as well. I feel like they are going to win. Obviously, we'll have to see what happens in the Western Conference Finals, but like that Verhage Bennett Kachuk line has been unbelievable. It feels like every game that line is carrying them offensively. It's just it's a different level that they're playing at. I think Carolina talked a little bit post game last night how they just felt like it wasn't really, once they got through the first couple of games, like it was kind of not going to happen. And obviously, that's not usually something, at least to me, I feel like that's not usually something you hear from players, are usually like, you know, we fought till the very end, but this was like Jordan Staal was like, no, we lost in the first 2 games. Like it's really demoralizing going down to where it was just pure domination all around. And then obviously, they couldn't get it back. But overall, interesting series. Not, I wouldn't say that was like that fun. It was kind of obvious where it was going to go, but be interesting to see Florida in the Stanley Cup final again.
The series got fun by game four. Like, that's it kind of turned around once the Hurricanes really had their backs against the wall. But I mean, like you said, Grace, like losing the first two games, especially in your own barn, that was a bad look. Go down 2-0 and it goes back to Florida. The writing was kind of on the wall from there. And then they roll out Kochetkov in game three to try and shake things up a little bit. And he got absolutely pummeled.
Hammered,
And
yeah.
like, and by the end of the game, Anderson was back in for Kochetkov in game three. And then they went with Anderson again in game four. Obviously, they get the shutout in game four out of Anderson, but I was more impressed with Sergei Bobrovsky in game four than I was with Frederik Anderson's shutout. Bobrovsky only let one goal through, 25 saves. Carolina won 3-0 on two empty net goals in the third period. Sergei Bobrovsky is still maybe the best goaltender in the league. And he proved it this series so consistently. Carolina, on the other hand, could not figure out their goalie issues whatsoever. And then, you know, game five rolls around and things just not going the way that the Panthers, or that the Hurricanes rather, would have it. Panthers just grind them away. They get the win. In Carolina really stings for those Carolina fans. They watched three losses at home in this series, and Carolina walks away with a banner in the rafters, one playoff or one Eastern Conference Finals win. They finally got it in the last 20 years. They finally got their one win. So it remains to be seen if Carolina can get over that hump though, and maybe get 2 wins, maybe 3 wins in the Eastern Conference Finals. Who knows? But Florida's going to represent the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup final. They await the winner of the Edmonton Oilers and the Dallas Stars. This series I thought was going to be a lot closer because I thought the Dallas Stars looked really good coming out of the second round. But this Oiler team is a problem. Connor McDavid is on a mission. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is playing well. Like, that's kind of how you know. Even with Zach Hyman going down, because he's out for the season now with that surgery, he had an upper body injury in game four. Zach Hyman out, but I still don't think that hurts the Oilers enough to get Dallas back into this series, especially the way that game four went, because 5-on-5, there was no space for either side to get anything going, and it came down to special teams. And Edmonton's power play is just really, really hard to stop. Dallas has a good penalty kill, but the Oilers are just exploiting their shape on the penalty kill. So Grace, we'll start with you this time. Going into game five tonight in Dallas, What do the Stars have to do here to kind of dig themselves out of this hole? Because it is also a 3-1 series lead now for the Edmonton Oilers.
Well, one thing I have for the Oilers, and we talked about this on one-on-one on Saturday, Tuck, is Stuart Skinner, who we just again can't seem to figure out. So listen, if Stuart Skinner has one of his off nights tonight, Dallas can win this game. I think that's the bottom line. He hasn't had many off nights recently. He stopped 86 of the last 88 shots in this series. So it's pretty darn good. But overall, they really just have to stop this Edmonton offense because, as you said, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has been turning it on recently. He's now fourth in postseason scoring with 18 points, which is crazy when you consider who else has been in this postseason. Obviously, Connor McDavid at the top, and then Leon Draisaitl as well. His last four games, he has nine points combined. This is ridiculous stuff, and this is again a team that also has Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So, listen, it's going to be tough for Dallas. They've kind of been getting stomped on offensively. They've been outscored 13-2 since game one of this series, which is just
Two
disrespectful.
goals in 9 periods of playoff
Yes,
hockey.
disrespectful from Edmonton, but I love it. I love Edmonton. But overall, I mean, they do have a hole to dig themselves out of here. It's one of those things where morale-wise might be kind of tough, as well, and obviously skill-wise, you got the greatest player on earth in Edmonton. So I don't know. I do think some of it is going to come down to Stuart Skinner. I mean, if he goes out there tonight and gives up five goals, then that's a different story. But if he is solid tonight, as he has been, Edmonton will be going to the cup final.
I think this has, for no reason, trap game written all over it for the Oilers. I think they take it in game six, going back to Edmonton. But I do think the Stars are going to take this one. And what they have to do to take this one is it's literally just score. That's that. Jason Robertson has the last two goals for the team. And that's, I mean, you go out and get a guy like Mikko Rantanen for games like tonight, for elimination games at home in your own barn. Like, that's why you got him at the deadline. So I'm expecting a big game from him. But I really like, I think being a Dallas Stars fan as well as the team has to be so frustrating because the West is so stacked these past couple seasons. And it almost seems like the West beats each other up so that the East can just walk into the Stanley Cup Finals. And obviously last year went seven, but like fatigue is a factor kind of late in the game, and the Panthers are gonna be coming off a ton of rest too. So if you're the Oilers, you need to get it done tonight. But I really do think this is the Stars game. I don't their thing all season has been scoring goals, and they haven't scored goals. So I feel like something's got to give tonight, especially with your fans. But the problem is Stuart Skinner has just turned into playoff Skinner. Like what where you, the ebbs and flows of the game are so crazy for him because he'll literally let in 10 goals one game and then have like four shutouts, and I just don't know where this is all coming from, but he did it last year. And I do think the Oilers are the team to beat out West and in the whole league. I think they're hungry. I think they're gonna find a way against the Panthers, but it starts with winning a series, and I don't think that's gonna happen tonight. I think the Dallas Stars take this one.
Yeah, Lydia, I really like that you mentioned Mikko Rantanen because he has just two assists in this series. No goals. Edmonton's done a great job defensively all around, but also particularly with shutting down Mikko Rantanen. He was an absolute problem against the
Yeah.
Avalanche.
I mean, he still leads Dallas in scoring, but not this series.
Not
It's
this
yeah.
series. Not even close. Like you said, Robertson is the last two goals for the Stars as a team, and those have come in the last 3 games. And meanwhile, Edmonton has kind of just been marching along. And yeah, like we've been saying, like something's got to give. Stuart Skinner's got to give for the Dallas Stars to get back into this series. But Stuart Skinner's kind of one of those guys where like he's either really, really hot or like you get one by him and they come in bunches. So if Dallas can get through, like the earlier the better, if they can get through to Skinner and get him to get inside his own head, that's ideal for the Dallas Stars. But if they can't really get to him within the first period or the first half of the second period, you're going to be able to tell where the game is going based on how Stuart Skinner looks, like pretty much in that first period. But yeah, game five tonight, and ideal, like The NHL's best case scenario, I guess, for the average hockey fan, best case scenario is Edmonton gets the win tonight, and you have two teams going into the Stanley Cup Finals who only played five games in the conference finals to get there, like freshest possible legs for the Oilers against the Panthers, theoretically, of course. But you know, if the Stars make things interesting here, they could send this to six. Maybe even bring it to seven because we've seen the Stars go deep into a lot of their series, and they're very familiar with playing a lot of games. No strangers to having their back against the wall, but that game is coming up tonight. As of the time that you're listening to this podcast, the Stanley Cup final matchup may be set, but it remains to be seen as of right now.
Wait, Tuck, can I quickly add one thing about this game tonight
Yeah.
that I just thought of, just looking at the lines? I think the first 10 minutes are going to be everything, maybe even the first 5 minutes, because we talked about Zach Hyman. I don't The Oilers might go after Mason Marchment, because I'm pretty sure he was the one that laid that hit. And I don't know like what the if they're going to or not, but like seeing one of your best players go down, I would think a team would respond, but who will that help? Who will that hurt? You don't know, because I think for the Oilers, they want to just play this thing 5-on-5 or on the man advantage. And I don't know if you want to necessarily, put yourself at a disadvantage right off the bat. So I think the first 5 to 10 minutes will be interesting to see where the momentum goes, because I think that'll really determine the game. Because like you said, if the Stars get to Skinner early, then he often, when it rains, it pours with him. But that was something that I totally forgot, that last game, Hyman, that was last game and not couple games ago. So there might be some bad blood in the water that has to be settled the first couple minutes.
I mean, it's really interesting you bring that up because you know Marchment has been a bit of a rat on this Stars team.
He's always in the penalty box.
After one of the Dallas goal, one of the Robertson goals, I saw like the clip of like they all go to celebrate near the wall, but Marchment is still in the crease for some reason, and like an Oiler comes down from the point, and Marchment just gives him an elbow, and like right after the goal too. But yeah, this is gonna be a really tough game for the Stars. But again, they're familiar with this spot, and it's gonna take a team effort, and it's probably gonna take Mikko Rantanen. I like that call out too. It's gonna take a big game from him, maybe even a two goal night, because he is like, it kind of feels like with Mikko Rantanen when he's not scoring, it feels like a buildup of like energy, like it's gonna release at some point. But hopefully for the Stars, it's tonight. But that pretty much wraps it up for the Stanley Cup discussion we have for today's episode. We have just two more things to touch on. First, I want to talk about the IIHF World Championship because, oh my goodness, for the first time since 1933, the United States of American men's national hockey team has won the IIHF World Championship. They defeated Switzerland in a really tight game, and I mean really tight. This game went to overtime at 0-0. And of all people on Team USA, Tage Thompson with the game-winning goal in overtime. It was a nasty goal, and Team USA gets the win over the Devils in Europe. No Nico Hischier for Switzerland, obviously, because he went down with an injury. But I have to feel for the other New Jersey Devils on that Swiss team who missed out on a gold. Hopefully it's more impetus for them to go win a cup. But this is really huge for Team USA. The junior team won their second straight world championship this season earlier in January. The women's national team won the ice hockey world championship in Czechia this year. And then the men's team brings it up with the triple crown and gets the win for the first time since 1933. So I guess the big question here is like how significant is this for US hockey? Because it's like Team USA has been getting better and better over the last couple of years, but now with the junior team, the women's team, and the men's team on top of the international scene, Lydia, we'll start with you for this one. Just what does this mean for the world of hockey and I guess the future of Team USA?
I mean, it means a lot. It's USA is always looked down upon by Canadians because hockey just not as big here as it is in Canada. And to see the continued success that they're having, and not just the continued success, like it's not like, because I'm kind of, I can speak about it like from the Canadian point. It's not like they're defeating Team Canada in games. Like Canada's like shooting itself in the foot in the quarterfinals. They've done that t 2 years in a row in the World Juniors, and they did that in this tournament as well. And you can't say they didn't have the personnel. I mean, you have Macklin Celebrini, Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon. Like you have the personnel. What is different for USA, I think, in the past 10 or so years that is making the difference is that NTDP program. And it's the fact that you're really putting the best of the best in a country, and they're playing, they're growing up and playing together. So when you get to the World Junior Championships, these guys are playing against teams like a Team Canada, where you throw them together. And these are guys that are arch rivals on teams. They're top prospects. I'm sure a lot of them don't like each other because they're at the age where you're not mature enough. Like your ego comes into play. And then you're facing off against Team USA teams that have been playing together, that are best of buds, they live together. So in terms of that sort of gap, that's why I think the US has been able to close the gap. And because this program has been around for a while, like I'm pretty sure Tage Thompson, he's a lot older than, some of the other NCP, but I think he came up through that program. So I think just the familiarity of players going over and playing in these tournaments from the US is what's making them so successful. And I don't see this slowing down anytime soon. And I realistically, like the only teams that consistently have competed against US Canada has been like Sweden and Finland. And obviously in this tournament, Switzerland. But the world is kind of, it all depends on who's eliminated, who what players you can get over. So it's a little different, but you can't say that these teams didn't have the personnel and the US didn't work for it. So I think if you're USA Hockey, the program's expanded exponentially in the past couple of years. And I don't see the train stopping. I think they're going to keep going, and it's up to other countries now to figure out how to match that level.
Yeah,
So
I agree with
it's not a world championship unless the US plays Canada,
that.
apparently.
Yeah, I
According
mean,
straight out of the camp
lost to
of
Denmark.
Lydia Perner. But Grace, yeah, what's your take on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Lydia raises a great point about like the camaraderie that Team USA has kind of across all levels at this point. Also want to shout out Bo Horvat, who got hurt here for Team Canada. They had to
That
send.
wasn't the difference, Grace.
No,
That
it
was
wasn't the
not the difference.
difference. Of course not. But he is going to be fine. But yeah, overall, we saw it at World Juniors this year. They have a lot of great guys there. They have great people. Like we don't talk that much about the women's side. They have a lot of great players there too. It's overall, I think it's great for the publicity of hockey in the United States, which was obviously helped a lot by Four Nations this year. Even though Team USA lost that, obviously we don't have to talk about that. But I just think I love it for hockey as a sport. I love for hockey in the States. Kind of the big four sport that's always been like brushed under the rug a little bit, because it's a little more niche. But I mean, it's tough to ignore these kinds of things when the American team is so good on all sides of the international hockey competition. It brings a lot more eyes around the country to the sport. I mean, definitely saw it at Four Nations, and hopefully we'll see it more with IIHF in the coming years. So I love it.
Yeah, I I'm really happy about it. Team USA, it's awesome. Again, hockey is just a kind of a weird sport in that way, where like the international world championships aren't super like, I don't know. I feel like people don't put as much weight behind the world championship stuff as they do behind the Stanley Cup, because the Stanley Cup is like the mother of all trophies. And so, in the hockey world, the Stanley Cup is kind of valued above pretty much any other like trophy. So that's why Four Nations, that's why IIHF, World Juniors, any of these tournaments all kind of don't feel like they have the pull exactly of the Stanley Cup final. But hardware is hardware for Team USA, and they hadn't had this one since 1933, and I think it's really cool that they. finally put together a type of team, like using that development program to their advantage, and putting together a team that can win at the international level. And they did just that. I also thought it was really cool that Team USA is still like continuing to carry the torch of Johnny Gaudreau. They had his jersey with them the entire run. They draped it over the trophy after they won it. It was a really cool moment. And I just love to see that that's not something that kind of sank into the background after the initial, like when the season started and it had just happened. Obviously, there were Johnny Gaudreau tributes all over the place. And at the Four Nations, it was the same thing with the jersey. But here now in May, they're still running with it. I imagine that jersey's probably not going to leave that locker room for a long time, if ever, for Team USA. But the United States, the IIHF World Champions, World Champions. But one more thing we got to get through before we wrap up the episode for today, at the express request of Lydia Perner, because she's particularly intrigued about it. I'll save what you have to say for last, so I'll ask Grace first. But Jonathan Toews, who hasn't played in a minute, he's been dealing with a respiratory syndrome for quite some time, pretty much since around COVID in like 2020, 2021. But according to his agent, speaking through his agent was Jonathan Toews, he's got something left in the tank. The Blackhawks are probably not the home for him anymore, although it would have been nice to see him stay in one uniform for his entire career. Blackhawks aren't exactly in a position to rebuild that, like the team in that way, or bring Toews in, but he could be a pretty solid addition, not as a lead guy, but maybe as a depth piece. Grace, like, what do you think of Toews coming back and like of his chances really of getting back on an NHL roster?
I like the story a lot. Obviously, it's going to be tough for Chicago, the place that they're in as a team right now. It's going to be tough for them to bring him back. As you said, Tuck, that would have been a really nice story if he had been able to play his career only in the Chicago sweater. But I like this a lot. It might be tough. This is one of those things we still don't know, like medically, a lot about the long-term effects of long COVID and all that kind of respiratory stuff. It's still very new, obviously, but I like this a lot. He's probably not going to be like a main piece of a team at the moment just because of how much time he's missed. But listen, why not, honestly? Like if he does think he's ready and like doctors clear him, like if he does think he has something left in the tank, if his body agrees with it, then I love it for him.
Yeah, I guess Tucker, do you want to go, or do you want me to go on my spiel about Jonathan
No, no, no,
Toews?
no, no. You go. I'm interested by how interested you were
Yeah.
in this, so
So,
let's hear it.
yeah. I mean, the reason I said this intrigues me is 'cause I genuinely have no idea where this is going to go. I mean, when I first got into hockey, there were three players that got me into it. Jonathan Toews was one of them, and then Ryan McDonough and Sidney Crosby. I know that's kind of a crazy list, but seeing Toews go down and the way he just completely like removed himself from the not I don't want to say from the world, but like he wasn't posting on social media, no interviews, like all this stuff, because he literally went abroad to like refind himself with the long-term COVID. And I just he is 37, but you gotta think, like, this is they called him Cap, like he was his nickname was Captain Serious. Like, this is a guy that knows how to win, and not only does he now know how to win, he now knows like winning the Stanley Cup's one of the hardest things in sports. But now, like, I think off the ice, having to come back from something like that, combined with his Stanley Cup experience, makes him like a really, really valuable asset to a locker room. Like, I'm thinking of it in the sense of being a Rangers fan. The Rangers have a broken locker room. There's not too much direction that they can go right now. They don't have a ton of money. Like, they're already looking into moving Kreider and Keandre Miller. I like to think that you can maybe get Toews on a cheap 1 year contract to New York, especially since his agent is Pat Brisson, whose son is on the Wolfpack. That probably has nothing to do with anything, but it seems like also there is a lot of interest in Toews with the fans. I'm not sure that interest is going to come as much from general managers because, like I said, he's 37 and he's been out of the league for so long. But this is a guy that you know is going to work his butt off to come back. And I think a team would be willing to take a risk on. And I think if the Jets want him, he's going to stay in Winnipeg because he's from Winnipeg with everything that he's gone through. But I think there's, I think, I do think he's going to get back in an NHL sweater. I have no idea what that contract's going to look like. Like salary wise, you got to think it's going to be like a 1 year deal. But I don't know if he's someone you can get for cheap. Like that would be something I'd want the Rangers to do, but only time will tell. That's why it intrigues me rather.
Yeah, I can't really imagine any team is that willing to shell out like a ton of money. He's not getting good. He's not going to get paid anywhere close to what he was getting paid when he did step away from the Blackhawks. And I can't imagine a team like you mentioned, Lydia. He's 37 years old. Like, I don't know if I'm taking that big of a monetary risk on a 37-year-old hockey player who hasn't played in a couple years. Like, it's a pretty big risk for any team,
But that's the thing,
especially a team like the Jets.
what's the market value? Like what's the salary? Like nobody has any idea.
I don't even think he knows. Like he'd probably, but that's the thing too. He's negotiating not from a position of power necessarily. Like this is a guy who stepped away from hockey and is now coming back like a couple of years later, but no one in the team has been like, or no one on any team has really been clamoring over when's Jonathan Toews going to come back? Because we'd really love to have him. It's not really a sweepstakes. It's more of just like a, hey guys, I'm available. Like, who want me?
It's kind of like Ilya Kovalchuk a few years ago. Like all of a sudden he just comes back from the KHL and like it was this huge big deal and he was all right. But like the circumstances are a bit different. But that's why I think it's kind of interesting to see what happens and how he does.
Who will win the Jonathan
You
Toews
chase sweepstakes.
sweepstakes? I've seen him connected to the Jets. I've also seen him connected to the Devils, but I'm pretty sure that's just because Devils writers attach anybody and everybody to the Devils in hopes that Tom Fitzgerald does something. But that's just about gonna wrap things up for us here on 5-on-3 this week. The Edmonton Oilers and the Dallas Stars play tonight at 8 p.m. Thursday, May 29th. The Oilers trying to get to their rematch. It feels like we're barreling towards a rematch between the Panthers and the Oilers here. It's going to be absolute cinema in the Stanley Cup final. But for Grace McCarron and for Lydia Perner today, I have been Tucker Austin, and this has been 5-on-3, a production of WFUV Sports. Goodbye, everybody.